1975. It's approximately 1:45 p.m. Wednesday. And when you retired from the Coast Guard, what was your rate? Your rank?
Commander.
You were a commander, full commander?
Full commander.
He was full commander in the United States Coast Guard, retired. Roy, R-O-Y, Edward, E-D-W-A-R-D, Stockstill, S-T-O-C-K-S-T-I-L-L, at 2735 Southwest 2nd Avenue, Gainesville, Florida, 32607. Commander Stockstill was born July 17, 1906, at Picayune, Mississippi, the son of H. Monroe Stockstill and Sarah Charlotte Keaton Stockstill, who were natives of Mississippi and Louisiana. He was raised and went through high school at Picayune, Mississippi, and then he went to the Marion Institute, which was a preparatory academy for the various Coast Guard, Navy, and West Point academies at Marion, Alabama. He attended Marion Institute in 1927. At that time, the president of the Marion Institute was a Mr. W. L. Murphy, M-U-R-P-H-E-E, and the commandant of cadets was Lieutenant Colonel Charles Newton Sism, S-I-S-O-M.
No, wait, S-I-S.
S-I-S-S-O-M. There's two N. Let me get Sism's name right. That's S-I-S-S-O-M. I say again, capital S-I-S-S-O-M. That's Charles Newton Sism, who was a commandant of cadets at Marion Institute in Marion, Alabama, in 1927. C-I-S-S-O-N. Very good.
C-N Sisson.
C-N Sisson. And then he went to the Coast Guard Academy. When did you go to the Coast Guard Academy?
September 1927
at... And where did you go to the academy at?
New London, Connecticut.
New London, Connecticut. And you were then in the class of 31?
31.
Class of 1931.
Actually, the Coast Guard was, at that time, this is not of any interest here for your book, but there was a three-year course. But I got banged up in football. I got my shoulder separation and banged up there, and there was some others in there. And I got turned back, delayed.
Was that in a game that you got banged up?
Yes.
What game was it? Do you remember?
I don't remember a thing.
You don't remember who you were playing? Or?
No, I don't remember. Because I played on a junior varsity and a varsity game there. Now, but anyway, I got banged up and delayed a year. Now, I think there was 12 or 14 others there that were turned back for another year.
And so you spent 4 years.
I graduated in 1931.
And got your commission as an ensign in 31. And so you were an ensign of the class of 31 then.
That's right.
And we were stuck with that off that date from then on the rest of your career.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Well, now,
where'd you go from the academy?
I went from the academy to the Coast Guard cutter Saranac down in Galveston, Texas. And I served in a lot of ships on different stations there, very few orders, but then the movement, permanent transfers, but there's some temporary duties and so on. And I made a couple of cruises to Europe during a cadetship, and also after I graduated the ship, we had trips to Central and South America, and one Goodwill ship that was on came out of San Diego and went down when
okay, yes,
but this doesn't have anything to do with the Lion Islands.
When did you, somewhere along the line, you must have met a Miss Gear?
I met her in New London, Connecticut.
Was that when you were going to the academy?
That's when I was going to the academy. Now, her people, she was born in Norwich, Connecticut, and their people came down here in 1909.
Down here in Florida?
Down here at Gainesville. Well, now, I didn't meet her until 1929. about a couple of years.
You were in your third year at the academy at that, or second year at least at the academy.
Third year at the time. And we got married after I graduated in May. I think it was either the same day or the next day. She'd probably kill me if she'd hear me say that. But anyway, we got married there, and then we went to Galveston, Texas. But
well, now that was in 1931. What day is your wedding anniversary?
15th.
15th of May?
Yeah.
Tomorrow.
Yeah.
You better not forget.
Yeah, I bet it's
not. That word, speaking of his wife, Prudence, P-R-U-D-E-N-C-E, Maria, M-A-R-I-A, Geer, G-E-E-R. And she was from Gainesville, Florida, or at least their folks had been down here in 1909.
That's right.
And but they were, for some reason, she was in New London, Connecticut.
She got out of high school here, or for some reason, I don't know what, she decided that she'd go up and visit this aunt of theirs, a relative of her mother's, her father's aunt or uncle. And she was going there to, and was wanted to go to some secretarial school that was there. And she attended that school for a while, but she finally gave it up.
And she met a good-looking Coast Guard cadet at that time, huh?
And I wasn't much in the mood for the idea of secretaries going out. At that time, I thought maybe we could struggle along without her having to work.
Well, when you you were married May 15th, 1931, and tomorrow is going to be your 44th anniversary.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Then, in 1931, you were transferred to Galveston. And how did you get to Galveston?
By train. I paid my own expense. You don't paid her own expenses. Of course, I had transportation, but
you had to pay her expense of the train.
And they got down there. And, well, I was on the Itasca for maybe 2 years, I think it was. And then I was transferred to 165 patrol boat to Perseus. It was Stapleton, Staten Island, New York. And then Kenner was there at the same time with a bunch of others. Well, in 1934, there was a lot of rum business going on and dope out there off the California coast. Then they transferred to Perseus and four other, these 165-foot patrol boats to the west coast. There was another one that went to Calypso, and the Perseus went to San Diego. There was one or two that stopped at San Pedro, and there was maybe one that went up to San Francisco, or maybe to Puget Sound. I don't remember just what the distribution
was. Were you on the Perseus out of New York when Kenner in command? Were you on board when he ran it aground in a snowstorm in New York Harbor?
No. Now, Kenner was not in command of this ship, the Perseus.
Oh, I see.
Now, he was on another one. I don't remember what it was. It was a Calypso, a Perseus. I don't know. That's too far back.
Another tape, and this is why I must put these things on tape.
He
ran one of them aground, and the harbor master or commandant called him up and said, you know, what happened? He said, I goofed. He'd had no excuse. He just ran to the ground.
Well, anyway, there was all of that business out there, and the now after I joined that, I left the Saranac in 1933.
Uh-huh.
And I got to the Perseus that same year, 1933.
In New York.
In New York, Stapleton, Staten Island.
Uh-huh.
And we were there, that was in early March, April, somewhere along there. And we were there for over a year, 1933 until 1934. And we left New York, Stapleton, in 1934. It must have been March. And we went to San Diego. And the Calypso and the Perseus were at San Diego, and I was on that ship for a while out there. Then I went from San Diego to Honolulu, where I joined the Itasca, and was out there for a couple of a year and a half, and then the Itasca was reassigned to San Diego, and we came back. And then I went on engineering duty, training, and then finally became engineering officer. And after I was on there, see, that had to be around 38, 39, 40. I was engineer officer on there because I made two Bering Sea patrols. I came back and then was transferred from there back to the Coast Guard District Office.
In Honolulu.
Now, I think that our districts were about the same as the Navy. I don't know whether you have... The commandant of the 14th Naval District is Pearl Harbor.
Right.
And I think our headquarters, the commander of the 14th Coast Guard District, was in the federal building, post office building.
Well, then you were on the Itasca for about 4 years.
Well, I was on there longer than that, seemingly. I was on there quite a long time. I felt like if I wanted to hawk that damn ship,
you owned it.
It was mine. I had a plank in there.
All right. Well, now, when the Calypso and the Perseus were at San Diego in 1934, those were 165-foot patrol vessels.
Yes.
And you were you on the Calypso or the Perseus again?
I was on the Perseus.
On the Perseus again?
No, I stayed on the Perseus. All the time.
Oh, you brought her through the canal, did you?
Brought her through the canal. And while we went around and went to San Diego, then the rum business picked up over on the East Coast. Then the Perseus and the Calypso and those vessels. I know the Perseus was, and I think the Calypso was too. There was a group of them. We transferred and came back for temporary duty on, not a permanent assignment. But we came back from San Diego on the Perseus, and we went to New London, Connecticut, and was berthed there in New London, not Stapleton. Now,
this is 1934.
1934, and there was a guy by the name of Birkett, B-I-R-K-E-T-T. Now, Bird, he was Lieutenant Commander John Henry Bird, J-H-B-Y-R-D, was the commanding officer of the Perseus. And when I joined, or when I went to the Perseus from Galveston, the first commanding officer of that ship was Hap Moore. Harold Conklin Moore was commanding officer of the Perseus. Then later on, when we got back to New London, it seemed to me like that John Bird was commanding officer there for a short time, and then he was relieved by F.H. Birkett, B-I-R-K-E-T-T. Then we had another commanding officer. I don't remember who it was. Maybe Bird came back to the ship, and we went back out to San Diego.
Now, did Prudence come back across the country again?
Yeah, she came back across the country. I paid pay. We put our things in storage, and we got a
new So she apartment. Walked from the train from San Diego to New London all by herself then?
Well, our son was ready. And,
when was your son born?
Our son was born on the 22nd of September, 1932.
32. I see. You were at that time were then stationed in Galveston.
Yes.
And he was born in Galveston then, or near
Galveston. No, she
came
when
home.
I went to South America on a cruise.
I see.
And she left Galveston and went to New London, Connecticut. And we went to the Navy Yard for a little overhaul before we went down, then from the Navy Yard to New London, and picked the cadets up and went on a cruise to South America.
I see.
And then When the ship came back, left the cadets at New London, then we sailed and went to Galveston, and a few weeks after I got back to Galveston, Sonny was born, and he was born in New London, Connecticut.
In New London, not in Gainesville.
Not in Galveston.
I see. But were her parents, she went back to her aunt and uncle then rather than to her parents here?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what was your son's name?
Roy E. Stockstill II.
Roy E. Stockstill II. And what did he do for a career later on as a year?
Well, he went on through, he attended a number of high schools, grade school, grammar schools, some in California, San Diego, or mostly out of San Leandro. Then he went to school, St. Louis College. Of course, they had grade schools and high schools and college. They call it a college there. But anyway, he went to school there. Then they had to come out when the Japs hit Honolulu. Then he attended school there in San Leandro, California. And then I get out of the islands and came on back, and she got to Duluth, Minnesota, and he attended some schools there. Then I was retired on the 1st of April in 1945. I had too much gun concussion. I can't hear, or I have about a 21 or 2% deficiency in hearing, both ears. And we thought maybe that we might go out and live in California. So when we got through with this job on Inspector of Engineering, now this was due during World War II, and then I was transferred from there to take charge of one of these Navy frigates, escort type vessel at San Francisco. Well, they were up there at in the Berkeley area. There's a little town there north and west of Berkeley.
Richmond?
Richmond. Kaiser Shipyards at Richmond. Well, I got on that thing. I was a commanding officer. By that time, I was commander. We went on a shakedown, and it was shook everybody, mostly the people apart. But when I was down there, there was some of those anti-aircraft guns that was firing at stuff aft. And the muzzle of those guns weren't more than 8 feet, blasting aft, and I was up here, and it just killed my ears.
Oh, that's too bad. Well, your son, what did your son do for a living?
Well, we went to the university here. He thought he wanted to be a personnel director of personnel.
He went to Gainesville here then.
He went to the University of Florida, and he took his first degree, a bachelor degree, in courses that involved a great deal of psychology, as a personnel man would have to know. And when he got through with that, he had to go in for the military, went into the Army. By induction.
That was Korean War, about 1952.
Korean War. Well, he went to the induction center in Jacksonville, and somehow they got an army over there got hold of him, and they sent him to what is that fort up there near Indianapolis? Fort Benjamin Harrison. That's where the Army trains all of their educational courses. They're very closely associated with Purdue University. And when he got there, he thought he would go in there and get more training in along the line, but he went there and found out that they had him scheduled to take a class in start teaching these people from the field about giving examinations in these various subjects. So he put in his time there behind the desk, evaluating and going over the tests that they had given and the answers that they had. And he stayed on that job until he got out. Well, when he served the time, he got out. He got a discharge and came on back here, and he went into industrial engineering. And he took a second degree in industrial engineering.
At the University of Florida.
At the University of Florida. When he graduated, got his bachelor's degrees in that, then he went to work for Procter & Gamble up here in Macon, Georgia. And they thought enough of him and so on. So there was special training with Procter & Gamble. Places in Ohio, and he also had to go to a school of a seminar up in New York. Then from there, they had him scheduled to go out to a new plant that they were opening up, Procter & Gamble, in Sacramento, I think it was. Well, he went out there, and for a while, he was with them, but instead of being work there that was industrial engineering, where they put him in there as a supply officer. Well, he wasn't very happy in that. But he was more interested in getting a job with some company that was had a need for an industrial engineer. Well, he knew somebody that was there, knew somebody else that was with the Space Administration that had there in Sacramento. What's the name of that?
Teledyne.
No, there's a... That's not the name of it, but it has to do with this Space Administration.
NASA, National Aeronautics and Space Administration?
No. It was
a company you're trying to name it.
Let me...
Well, that's all right.
I just want to get it straight. This space project, where they had a... God damn, it makes me mad not to be able to bring that.
They've had these high-powered rocket engines they tested there.
Yes. Sure.
Then where did he go after that?
Well, after he left that, there was somebody that worked for Procter & Gamble out there that knew something.
Was it Aerojet?
Aerojet General, yeah.
Aerojet.
Got it.
Well, anyway, there was somebody that he was acquainted with the Procter & Gamble people that had left Procter & Gamble, and they were down with the a new company that was making these tapes for tape recorders there in San Francisco. Oh, not in San Francisco.
That doesn't matter. But is that where he is now?
No. He went down there. They made him such a good offer that he just couldn't turn it down. Well, he joined that company and stayed there. They made precision computer tapes.
For IBM.
No, it was not IBM.
But like that, okay.
Because the biggest contract that was let for precision computer tapes that was ever made in this company.
I know who it is, but I can't think of it. Marie, what is the big tape company in Redwood City?
That was
Ampex.
That was Computer. What was Sonny's tape company?
Memorex. I have some of the Memorex tapes. Okay.
He joined Memorex.
Mm-hmm.
And he stayed there. And he went on and studied electronics and in the electronic field. And they kept pushing him up, increasing his salary, and kept going up. While he was still an industrial engineer, and he laid out, he grabbed a man-sized job there at Memorex because nobody knew how to lay out a plant. Now, I don't know how much you know about an industrial engineer and his job.
No, I
designing. Yeah. Well, took what they had, and they wanted to expand. So he got up a plans and an organization and wrote the job operations manual for each step from the time that they got the tape in there until it was put in a warehouse.
And is that where he's at now?
No. He got laid off out there.
Where is he now?
He's up here in Tallahassee.
In Tallahassee.
Now, he joined the group up here that had a job for the Board of Regents, the State Board of Regents, who governs the universities, the state system of land-grant colleges, just like in California.
So he's with the Board of Regents then in Tallahassee?
They had a project there. Now, he's not a member.
No, he works with the staff.
He works with a group hired by the Board of Regents. And their job was to set up an organization and plan on and tie it in computer-wise with each state university, including these junior
colleges. Things are complicated in this world now. Did you have any other children, or just
no? Just the one.
Well, now when you left there in 30, you were in New London in 34 on the Perseus, and then you went back to San Diego on the Perseus.
Yeah.
And
then from the Perseus to Honolulu on the Itasca.
I see. That would have been the end of 1935.
No, it was in 1936.
Okay, the first part of 1936.
Yeah.
Okay.
The early months of 1936. Well, I was on the Itasca out there, and they transferred the ship back.
Well, let's stay out there now.
Wait, just
there. Okay, go ahead.
Suppose I do this for you. It will give me time to, and maybe I may be able to dig up some dates.
No, that's all right.
I can write this stuff down and get
that's
things
all right.
More.
We're doing fine. But you've told. I want you to repeat what you've already told me. But you.
Now the other thing that back to the Line Islands down there. Now I don't know whether you saw it or not. But there's something that may be of interest to you. Back to the islands when the islands were abandoned. Now I got up to the point.
Okay, let's go back to the beginning. What were we? You went on the fourth cruise. They had established the colonies in the islands.
Well,
why did they do that? Why did they establish the colonies in the islands?
That was what I was coming to.
Yeah, but I never got it on the tape.
Oh, you got it? Been taking it right along?
Well, yeah, I've been wanting to.
The thing is, the reason that they put these colonies down there, as I stated, they were looking for stations along air route, commercial air routes from the United States, the west coast of the United States, say Los Angeles there, San Pedro, and from San Francisco mainly, for commercial air routes to the Orient. Well, these islands down there, there was many of those islands were under disputed jurisdiction. We claim jurisdiction by virtue of the discoveries of some of the old captains of whaling ships that was down there. It might have been most of them, or some of them were out of Boston. There might have been a few out of San Pedro or San Francisco. I don't know about that, but there were whaling ships flying American flags down there would claim discovery. Now, British ships were also in that area, and some of their captains would claim discovery, establishing a claim for Great Britain as to jurisdiction. Then the thing that had to try to be settled was who discovered it first, Great Britain or the United States. Well, both the United States, but primarily Great Britain, places a great deal of emphasis on jurisdiction by virtue of inhabitants on those islands. So, we got these weather stations down there to more or less strengthen our claim to jurisdiction by virtue of being
occupied with American people on. So that relieves some of the pressure in one way, although it never was contested. Now, we occupied Jarvis, Baker, and Howland Island, and then Canton Island, and Enderbury Island. Now, down at Canton Island, the United States got there a little bit late, and there was an Englishman down there on that island. Well, the United States just went a little bit further away along the beach and put up our colony. So this Englishman, he was there. I think he was only one man, but it was occupied. And we had our little camp over, and they got along all right. There was never any squabble about it that I knew anything of or anybody else. But now, they put those stations down there. It's a scientific affair, weather stations. They were equipped and took weather observations each 6 hours from each of these islands that were occupied. Each 6 hours, and that was given to the Coast Guard station at Wailupi, there in Hawaii, down the beach there, east of Honolulu, on the island of Oahu, came into our communication stations there, each 6 hours, weatherly reports, temperature, surface winds, and then they took observation along balloons that was released, and they'd follow them with a telescope, rise and so on. Direction of upper air currents, and so on. Now, we got that weather information. Now, also interested in this weather was the Navy. Not only because of the Navy craft that was in the Philippines, but because of Guam. And, of course, Navy flying craft later was involved, and especially aircraft carriers. It was in and around the area of Guam and around the Philippines, because there's a lot of weather, or so they claim, that there was a lot of adverse weather that these low pressure areas had developed down along these islands and drifts westward and then start recurving through the northwest, north and northeast, and come out and barrel across Guam, or maybe halfway between Guam and the Philippines, or hit the Philippines, or some of them are going up into Japan. So the Navy people on their aircraft, they were interested in it, and of course at that time they had the Army Air Force, and their long-range planes was interested in this weather too. So they were all interested in this business, and the Coast Guard went down generally on a quarterly period, taking new personnel, replacement personnel. Some would be down there for a while, and occasionally had to go down, and somebody had developed appendicitis, and medical reasons they'd have to bring them back. But we'd...
In fact, you lost one colonist, died of pharyngitis.
Died of something before he got back. I think it was a ruptured appendix.
To go back just for a moment, you stated that the reason for establishing these islands, because it looked like in the future we were going to need them as intermediate refueling stations for future air service to New Guinea, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States wanted to establish territorial rights. Under whose auspices, what Department of Government was this done?
I don't know, and I never did know precisely who authorized it or who directed it.
Originally, the director was a man by the name of Bill Miller.
He was with the Department of Commerce.
Yeah.
Bill Miller was. And they got the tied the Coast Guard in on it as being either the most feasible or just another job for the Coast Guard to do. I don't know how that was determined. But we went out.
And that was the Department of Treasury in those days.
Now, the Coast Guard was under the Department of the Treasury. Now,
and the State Department got into this too.
I don't know how far they were involved.
But in establishing the rights, they must have
been
involved.
But I imagine that they were involved to, or in a very indirect sense. After all, the State Department should know who what the Commerce is doing and what who's doing in such areas in the world wherever the United States interests are.
Now, the Department of Interior got interested, and you believe that the Secretary of Commerce Interior was Udall at the time. You're not sure of that, but you believe it was.
I think that Udall was the Secretary of the Interior. Now, this is the reason why I think that he was. I had to submit reports when I was down there. And they went to Udall. Now,
what kind of reports did you have to submit?
The people taken down, the amount of the Department of the Interior were funding the operations, the cost.
This was when you were there later, and this is when Mr. Black out of the Iolani Palace was running it.
He was running it. Now, they were funding it. And they kept on funding it. It was the Department of the Interior that was responsible for it. Well, now, out of Udall's office, Richard Black was his representative. Now, his title was, now this is Richard B. Black. Now, his title was a field representative. Of the Department of the Interior, Divisions of Territories and Insular Possessions.
How do you remember that? That's beautiful.
Now, that was his title. The field representative of the Department of the Interior, Division of Territories and Insular Possessions. Humorously, out there, we call it Emperor Jones' job.
Emperor Jones?
Emperor Jones.
And who was that was Black.
That was Black.
And he later, didn't he?
And later, Frank Kenner relieved Black. Black went from that job with Admiral Byrd down to the South Pole.
Down to Antarctica.
Antarctica. Then when Black left, since Kenner had been on Coast Guard ships going down there and knew what was going on and was quite familiar with the people of the Department of the Interior that was down there, Bill Miller, William Miller. So they gave, in addition to Frankie Kenner's job, they got Black's job also, administrative affair. Train personnel, procure equipment, provide supplies of all kinds for a period of time, usually three and a half, four months. That was a job that Kenner had after Black left. Then when I went out, it was transferred.
And when you were transferred there, you believe that the captain's name was Kelleher, K-E-L-L-I-H-E-R, and that must have been the very first part of 1936. And Kelleher, though, you're not quite sure, but if he was captain, probably left very shortly.
He might have been before that time. Now, when I went out there in 1936, I don't remember who was the commanding officer of the Itasca.
You don't believe it was Brown?
I really don't know. It might have been Brown.
But you did serve under Kenner when he was commanding officer of the task.
Well, he was in there for a time, but now that was the second trip that I was out there.
You must have been with Brown.
Well, anyway, Kenner was on there toward the last. But there was somebody there that was commanding officer before Kenner got to be commanding officer.
Derby?
It might have been W.N. Derby, or it might have been a guy by the name of, I just don't know, Finley, his name was out there.
There isn't Finley, he was out there later.
But he was in the district office. But now as to who was commanding officer of the Itasca when I joined it in Honolulu the first time, I don't know. Frank Kenner was the executive officer. Now, I know that. Frank Kenner was the executive officer.
Okay, well, if you went to Swan's Island and Pango Pango, if you went on that cruise, the captain was F.N. Brown. I mean, F.W. Brown. B-R-O-W-N.
Well, I know there's such a man. But it seemed to me like, oh, I kept thinking about Perkins. Now, there's two Perkins. Let me find, I'll try to get that straight.
Okay. You went down on the fourth cruise. You went to Swain's Island and Pango Pango.
Well, now, when we... On the last cruise that I made, the commanding officer of the vessel, I believe, was...
Was Tyler One?
No, honey. He was an engineer. G.B. Gelly.
You know Gelly.
Now, G.B. Gelly was there, and we took off, and as I recall it, this was the last cruise. Now, we sailed from Honolulu, and we sailed to Howland and Baker Island. Then we went to Canton Island, and from Canton to Enderberry Island.
This is the Taney.
On the Roger B. Taney.
Okay.
Now, from Enderberry Island, we went to American Samoa, Pango Pango. Now, on that trip, I was acting field representative of the Department of the Interior.
You were on that trip, I see.
I was on that trip, and we went to American Samoa, and we were... The Coast Guard and interest in commerce and Navy and all of our seagoing craft, and also some military aircraft and commercial aircraft. The Coast Guard was thinking of putting up a radio beacon station on American Samoa and there at Pango. Do you know anything about that?
No.
Well, there was myself and two junior officers. I think their name was Mellon. Mellon, M-E-L-L-E-N, and maybe, I've forgotten, but there was two junior officers there with me. We went over and walked along some island, went over to Northeast End and picked them up. Well, en route back. Now, our purpose was to try to make a fast survey of the area and see where would be the best location to put that radio beacon station. You know, there's hills there that come up quite a several hundred feet. And they finally decided that maybe on the northeast end of the island. would be the best place, because you couldn't put it in Pango, because any magnetic wave coming out of there would be distorted coming over the landmass. So we got it together. But after leaving Pango now, American Samoa, we stopped at Swains Island. Now, do you know anything about Swains Island?
A little bit. Tell me more.